This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. One does not, of course, just show up at Andrews Air Force Base and get on the shiny white and blue plane that's going to take Janet Yellen to China. So, after making the appropriate requests and applications and completing the requisite red tape and catching a shuttle bus at the Treasury Building at 5 o'clock in the morning, 20-something hours later, we landed in Beijing.
So we're in Sanlitun right now.
We are. I'm going to walk on the road because you're walking on the road. So if you get us killed, it's on you. That's all I'm saying.
But it's filled with bikes right now on the sidewalk. I
wanted to come, first of all, because it's my job, but also because I lived and worked in China back in the day, and I'll take any chance I can get to get back to see what's been happening. Yellen's visit, her first in office, comes at a challenging time. There has been a changing of the economic guard in Beijing. The relationship between the two biggest economies in the world is, if not fraught, definitely tense, and trust is low. There were, over the 2.5 days we were on the ground, a couple of high-level meetings, various photo ops, a 45-minute press conference, and not too long before we got back on the plane to come back, an interview with me in the press attaché's office at the American Embassy.
Secretary Yellen, welcome to the program. It's good to have you back on.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Kai.
Last time we spoke, back in March, you were pretty clear that what you're trying to do with the Chinese is establish a floor to this relationship to stop it from getting more destabilized. And I guess my question is, do you think this trip has done that?
I think it's certainly been constructive and helped because really over the last several years, and especially with COVID, there's been very little communication between people, not only officials, but also just citizens of America and China. We've grown apart and misunderstandings have developed. And to stabilize our relationship, to put a floor under it and hopefully begin to improve it over time, it's necessary to meet, to discuss our differences openly with respect, and to develop channels of regular communication. And that certainly was a major goal of my trip. I think it was successful in that sense.
So let me take you back then to a speech you gave in April as a precursor to this trip. And in point of fact, you mentioned in that speech you wanted to come to Beijing in the near future. And you said one of the things you're trying to get across to the Chinese is that, and this is a quote from your speech, China's economic growth need not be incompatible with U.S. economic leadership, right? So let me poke you in the eye a little bit. What if the Chinese give a speech and say, America's economic growth need not be incompatible with Chinese leadership? How do you react to that?
Well, we need to find ways to both work together to have a significant role in the global economy. And certainly China has expressed the view that it's important for both of us to be able to thrive in a global economy.
So let me go about it a different way then. One of the things you've said repeatedly, you said it on this trip, you've said it in all the speeches you've given and in the public presentations, is that you want to make it clear that the Chinese understand that America taking steps in its national security do not mean that we are going to compete with them unfairly economically, right? You want to make sure that national security is a prime factor in the American policy.
Yes.
How do they react to that when you bring that up? I mean, you spent 10 hours, as you just said in this press conference, you spent 10 hours over 2 days. And I guess my question is, when you say it's national security, it's not economic competition, what do they say to you?
Well, they're concerned, of course, that it may be economic competition and that our motive may go beyond national security. So my job is to try to explain to them that we have been and intend to be transparent about the actions that we've taken and are contemplating, that the motive and objective is national security, although beyond that, we've made clear that supply chain resilience is also important, especially in the aftermath of the pandemic, and that some of the actions that we have taken reflect our desire to diversify our supply chains. And so I spent many hours with my counterpart going through in detail our concerns and addressing them. If they're concerned that the impact of our actions goes well beyond national security and has a negative impact on their well-being broadly, that we're open to listening to that concern.
Did they reciprocate and say, Janet, you can call me anytime?
We have certainly agreed that we will maintain open channels of communication and deepen our discussion of concerns that one another have.
That's not a yes.
Well, it's pretty much a yes.
All right.
in the sense that we fully expect to have more frequent communications to explore concerns.
I want to get to the de-risking and decoupling thing that you have talked about, and there is sentiment out there amongst the Chinese that what you are trying to do, what you and the Biden administration are trying to do, is to decouple from the Chinese economy, the two biggest economies in the world, separating in a way. And you're trying to make the point that de-risking the American economy, providing our national security and changing our supply chains, is not decoupling. How do you make the average American understand that?
Well, the United States and China have almost $700 billion of trade this year. And most of this trade, and we have American firms that are active in China and have been active in China. They have been here for decades. I was able to meet with businesses here that are active in hospitals, in medical devices, in agriculture, that really don't implicate national security concerns. And we both benefit from these economic interactions. And I've said I think it would be disastrous to attempt to disentangle all of that economic activity and something that would be disruptive to both our economies and the global economy.
You, as you say in your speeches, you're an economist by trade. You look at the world through that lens. And you have been interacting with China for a number of years now, both in your prior capacities and now in this job. And you're a labor economist specifically. And I wonder what you see when you look at the Chinese economy from when you first started coming here and today, right? Because it's a labor challenge that this economy is dealing with.
Well, they have 1.4 billion people. And I guess what I see is an economy that over many decades has opened up, has developed, and has lifted many millions of people out of poverty, which is a very substantial achievement. And trade and investment with the United States and with other countries have been part of what's enabled that progress. One thing, of course, I noticed being in Beijing, certainly since I was here last, is that the air is cleaner.
Yes.
They've addressed a serious pollution problem. And while they are, I believe, the world's largest greenhouse gas emitter, they have made substantial investments that have resulted in technological innovation in electric cars, renewables, that have the potential to benefit not only our own efforts, but to be transferable around the world in ways that will make the project of mitigating climate change more cost-effective.
Do you think you can do it? Do you think the Biden administration, through your work and Secretary Blinken's and Secretary Kerry Ambassador Kerry now is coming, can you stabilize it? Because there are so many challenges.
There are challenges, but I believe there is a desire on both sides to stabilize the relationship and to constructively address problems that each of us see, to do so frankly with candor and to build a productive relationship going forward.
This gets to my next question, but when a diplomat says frankly and candidly, that's always code word for, man, those are tough conversations.
Well, I spent more than 5 hours yesterday with my counterpart discussing a very wide range of issues, macroeconomic developments in our own economies that influence the global outlook, things concerning debt and climate change, health issues. And we frankly set out our concerns and invited further in-depth discussions by our staff over time to sort out our concerns.
I have to tell you, I was in the pool spray, that photo spray at the top of that meeting where Minister Ho read his statement and you read yours. And we got to the end of yours, and in the last paragraph you mentioned that we will not compromise on national security concerns, even though it harms us economically. And I was watching Minister Ho when you said that, and you could see his face get a little tense. It was interesting to see.
Well, it's an area of concern because this is a motivation for us to place some restrictions on technology that can be sold or transferred to China from the United States. Now, I would point out that China has some similar restrictions.
Which I'm sure they are.
It's a concern on both sides.
I get that. But I'm sure they're saying, look, the U.S. is doing it. Why can't we do it? Right?
Well, we both do it because national security is a critical concern. And I certainly made clear that we're not going to back off protecting national security, that that's something that they need to understand. But that when we do that, we will try to make sure that our actions are clear, transparent, narrowly targeted, and provide channels by which they can tell us if they feel that it goes beyond that and is harming them.
Okay. Last thing, because I know you and we have a plane to catch. I was thinking about you in this job. You've been an economist for decades now, right? But as I was watching you the other day come down the steps off that plane with the red carpet and Ambassador Burns and the Chinese government greeting you and all the cameras, it occurred to me, and clearly you've thought of this before, you're no longer an economist, really. You're a diplomat. And I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, it's an honor to be able to contribute to the improvement of the functioning of the international economy. And this is one of the most important bilateral relationships and economic and financial relationships that we have. And its functioning well should matter and does matter to the American people, the Chinese people, and the globe. And being able to contribute to making that relationship work well is a responsibility and an honor to be entrusted with that.
Madam Secretary, I appreciate your time, as always.
Thank you.